Borden of Yale, 09, written by Mrs. Howard Taylor. Chapter 2, The Hill School, 1902 to 1904. AET 14 to 16. Quote, "What, know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own, for ye are bought with a price? Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 and 20. Birthday verse given to William by his mother when he was about 8 years old, which became the keynote of his life. The glory of the Hill School when William entered it as a lad of 14 was not its assembly hall and library, its gymnasium or athletic field. Much of the splendid equipment of today had not yet come into existence. But the school had reached high water mark in the last decade of the life of its great headmaster, when what he was among his boys, 400 of them, overflowed classrooms and dining hall, may be judged by the inscription on the simple marble that stands in its resting place in the ivory-covered cloister of the chapel. John Meigs, strong in tempers, tender, servant of Christ, master of boys, maker of men. His courage was the foundation of the school, his passion for truth its light. "Obstacles are the glory of life," was one of his sayings, and no slackness or shirking was tolerated at the Hill. Prompt, alert, indefatigable himself, he demanded the same of all about him, and masters as well as boys awoke under his influence to a new, stimulating realization of what they could accomplish. There was a buoyancy, a spirit of energetic enthusiasm that was contagious, as a headmaster wrote, who had once been on the faculty of the Hill. Everybody was systematically yet happily busy. There seemed to be never an idle minute. In the background of the picture was equally satisfying, a combination of perfectly kept equipment and quiet appointments, bespeaking good breeding, artistic taste, and culture. Through it all appeared a seriousness of purpose, not obtrusive, yet hardly concealed by the various devices for interesting the boys in the realities of life. Whether in the genteel, comfortable air of the dining room, amongst the varied activities of the athletic field, or in the more rarefied atmosphere of the schoolroom chapel, there was the same heartiness and stimulus, physical, intellectual, and spiritual, in the center of it all. The animating story of this city on the hill was Professor. Its ideals were his ideals, and its system was the device of his genius for making those ideals practical and applying them to the everyday problems of life. Footnote from The Master of the Hill by Walter Russell Bowie, from which further quotations are made in this chapter. End of footnote. There was, under the influence of Dr. Meigs, it's M-E-I-G-S, a splendid insistence upon the sanctity of the body, its reverent, radiant uses. With all his power, he sought to make the boys understand that the strength of the noblest manhood is built on purity, and that impurity is weakness and shame. Self-reverency, self-knowledge, self-control, he believed with Tennyson, lead life to sovereign power. But he was far from trusting in moral training alone to develop the all-round manhood he had in view. A pencil memorandum gives some of his deeper thoughts in this connection. The school must educate, develop, guide, and instruct that spiritual faculty which, by whatever name we call it, is supreme. There is no other restraining power other than religion. Sympathy, the innate horror of doing wrong to the fellow creature, self-respect, the innate horror of doing wrong to ourselves, are real powers in all finer natures, but a restraining power is needed. the power of school morality will be solved by a religious motive or none. Coming from a great educator, this statement is noble, and the way in which he and his colleagues acted upon it gave the character all its own to the Hill School. The religion which John Meigs led the boys to understand and seek after was no artificial piousness. It was deep and manly and straightforward choice of Christ as plan, master, pattern, and Lord. In this connection, we note it. As with the aspiring athlete and the eager learner, so must it be with young Christians. He must be taught to study the great book of rules for daily living, to seek his great captain in difficulty, and to ask for guidance in prayer, to heed the coach who has gained wisdom and victory in his longer game of life, and to share counsels, joy, and confidences in brotherly meetings for prayer. He must realize that the test of this religious life is what he is and what he does when he is not on his knees in prayer, not reading his Bible, not listening to great preachers, and not participating in religious meetings. About the Sunday services of the school, there was the same naturalness and appeal to the boy where he lives. Distinguished preachers came to the regular chapel, but the characteristic thing was the Viper Hour, where hymns were sung, and the man who knew and understood them best would sometimes speak and always pray. One of his boys wrote, "The real picture of the professor, which always comes clear and distinct from memories of the old school days, is as he sat at his desk in the schoolroom of a Sunday evening at the song service, and the hymn I always associated with him, Isten Feste Berg. That is what he looked and what he was, a firm, strong, kindly, helpful citadel." There seemed to be something in the professor's face as he came down the aisle at the close of those song services on Sunday nights, and I never quite caught at any other time. It's a something words will not tell. And there were other things Hill boys could never forget, among them the professor's utter sincerity and truthfulness and his hatred of everything mean and underhand. They remember that he never stole upon them unawares, but that always his heavy footfall, every ounce of his great frame, telling at every step, resounded through the corridors as he approached. And in the memory of that sound, they find their most vivid impression of what is meant by the hatred of shame, servitiveness, and unfairness. Truth-speaking and truth-loving, he considered the very bedrock of character, and with these he classed obedience, which in his thought stood for working conformity to the right standards of the school, which all must accept who accept its life. Obedience not so much to rules as to the high majesty of accepted duty. On this point he could have no refusal and no evasion. To the father of the boy about to be expelled, he wrote, "His vital and fatal lack is that of obedience. He has so indulged himself that self-pleasing is the law of his life, and deference to a higher law seems repugnant. Your experience will reinforce my position touching the vital necessity of submission to law as the primal condition of moral as well as physical life and well-being." Dr. Meigs was keenly alive also to the importance of organized games and athletics on account of the moral training they afford and the contribution to purity of life. He was fortunate in having secured the services of Michael F. Sweeney, the holder when he came to the Hill, and for years afterwards of the world's record for the high jump. A member of the faculty tells us that he became not only the physical director of the gymnasium and the track work, but also the coach and controlling spirit of the organized games in the school. Between him and the headmaster, there was a sympathy and understanding which grew into the most loving identity of purpose and into all his relationships with the boys. Mr. Sweeney bought not only his technical skill, but the power of a Christian idealism, which left its deep impression on the spirit of many a lad who would hardly have been reached through any other channel. Borden had come to the great school well grounded in the principles for which it stood. Sincerity and truthfulness were part of his character. One could never think of him in connection with any sham. There was so little self-consciousness about him or morbid craving for appreciation that one who knew him most intimately could say, "In all the years I was in close touch with him, I never saw him do anything for effect." A school friend, while he spoke of William as a sturdy fighter, recalled also his reserve and dignity and steady, quiet strength. Outwardly, he was undemonstrable. But his home letters revealed the same warm-hearted, earnest, impetuous boy as of years. September 27, 1902. "Dear Mother, today is the first time since I left Boston that we have seen the blue skies or sunshine. It has been raining steady since the evening I arrived until yesterday evening. I like the school very much. All the old fellows are nice to the new fellows, asking us to come and see them in their rooms, etc. My room is in the East Wing, second floor, number 4. My roommate is a very, very nice fellow, a little older than I am, and 2 or 3 inches taller. A great many of the older fellows here knew John, his elder brother. Most of them are 6th formers. All the old teachers are very nice to me, and they seem very jolly, especially Mr. Ralph, Mr. Hadlock, and Mr. Weed, whom I suppose you met. I like Professor and Mrs. John very much from what I have seen of them so far. Many parents came down with the fellows the first day, and even some sisters. Our rooms are very nice. It has 2 large windows looking out on the quadrangle. Under the sill of each is a small window seat, which could be made quite nice if they had cushions and pillows on them. I am taking football for exercise. I am now trying for the second time, but I don't think there is much chance of making it. Last night, they had the first meeting of the YMCA. Trooper Wilder is president, and John Halliburg is vice president. The meeting was great. Troop spoke first, and then a great many of the old fellows got up and spoke. Dwight Meigs led in prayer, and then other fellows gave short prayer. Ending on page 24. This year there are more new fellows than ever, said Professor. Had turned away some because he couldn't accommodate them. I sat at Mr. Wheat's end of the 5th form table, which is right at the end of Mrs. John's table. Give my love to Granny and everybody. Tell them I expect to write soon. Your loving son, William. October 4th, 1902. Dear Sis, I received your letter yesterday and thank you for it very much. As my roommate gets about 3 letters every mail, I like to get 1 once in a while. Talk about work. I have 6 studies. Chemistry, English history, French, Greek, English, and Bible history. The English comp is fierce. We have to make a literal translation of parts of Virgil or Caesar, and in class change us into idiomatic English. Then, again, we have to write on the character of people in the Sir Roger de Coverley papers, in the style of Steele. We have had 2 YMCA meetings, at one of which Boyd Edwards, who was at Northfield, spoke. I have joined it. Also my, quote, wife, unquote, his roommate, Eugene DiLerno. Throop Wilder is fine. He is the president of YMCA, Athletic Association. I am out trying for the second team. It is pretty hard work. There are a great many Chicago fellows here. Hope you will write soon again. I am your loving brother, Bill. I haven't been homesick a bit. October 26, 1902. Dear Father, Mother says you are working over the plans of our Camden house day and night. I haven't noticed any pictures of summer houses in the magazines. Harry Widener is the son of the man who owns that house you like so much. You remember we were looking at it in a magazine at Camden last summer. We have had 3 football games so far. The first 2 were at the Hanover Grammar School and Princeton Freshman. The score in each game was 0-0. The third game was a perfect clinch for us, the score being 41-0 in favor of Hill. Only 1 goal was missed. Monday, tomorrow, the annual interclass track will be held. I am going into the shot put. It is a handicap meet, so I will have a little show, but not much. I wish you would get me a shotgun and give it me for my birthday so that I could have it down here and shoot a little so that I could go hunting at Christmas vacation. I will be an account of my expenses up to the present time here. With lots of love, your son, William. And accounting. Football supplies. 3.20. Posters, $1.05. Contribution, 50. Clothes press, $1. Eatables, 20. Screwdriver, 14 cents. Book rack, 20. Picture wire, 20. Class paper, $1.90. Clothes, $1. F's, example, tuck, 30. Paper, 2. Stamps, 10. F's, 45. Contribution, $1. Window cushions, $9.98. Stamps, 10 cents. Hill banner, 50 cents. Thumbtacks, 9 cents. Car fare, 10 cents. Soda, 15 cents. Pillow, $1.50. Reading room fee, $1. Apps, 35. Contribution, 65 cents. Total, $25.68. October 26, 1902. Dear Mother, last Sunday, we only danced for a little while and all sat around on the floor and sang songs. I liked it much more than dancing and hope we will do it again. I suppose you are waiting until November 1st, his birthday, to spend down anything, but when you do, I wish you would send plenty of fruit and cake, and we can have jam. So I wish you would throw in a few glasses of different kinds of jelly, which help along the sandwiches we have daily at 11:43. Mr. Sphere was here today and preached. He was fine. He seems to have changed a great deal. His voice is terribly deep bass. I will have to stop now at the prep bell for bed has rung. With lots of love, William. January 18th, 1903. Dear Mother, we have had good weather lately, and today is simply fine. The sky is clear and cloudless. The air is cool and bracing. I am to take a long walk this afternoon with some fellows. About my examinations, I passed algebra easy enough and got 100 in it, I think. But I did not pass geometry. However, Mr. Shepherd let me go into the class, and I will try again to pass it Monday. And he will help me, sort of tutoring. And I hope to pass it tomorrow. I took an exam in Laura Doon, and the result was rather surprising. I got 95 in it. There wasn't a single mistake in spelling or punctuation in the whole thing, and he had not made a single mark of correction anywhere. It was quite long, taking me nearly 2 hours of steady writing. I have a terribly hard time in studying now. In fact, I scarcely do anything but study. Studying at night. Every spare minute from the time I get up until school begins, then at the recesses. After lunch, I have about an hour and a half spare time. Then I have to prepare my lessons for the afternoon session and then begin the same program again after supper. February 2nd, 1903. Dear Mother, you say you like my hard work. Well, I don't think you would if you knew how terrible it is. I work every little spare minute that I have, almost. And when Saturday comes, you'll just about play it out and don't get a decent rest before it begins again the next week. And then if you get a third list after working so terribly hard, it makes you feel sort of discouraged. Our English is the worst stuff imaginable. It is Carlyle's essay on Burns. Why is it something awful? You can't make heads or tail out of it, and it takes about 2 hours. Hard study to know anything about it at all. We look forward to getting through with this term and scratch off a day on the calendar every day. There are now about 8 weeks left of toil and drudgery. The weather here is awful too. One day, It's summer and the next winter. First rain, then snow, etc. I am losing weight quite fast now under Mr. Sweeney's work. I have lost 4 pounds and lose about 3 pounds a week. I will soon be a skeleton, won't I? But I guess it won't matter much. Yours with lots of love, William. March 1st, 1903. Dear Mother, I was very glad to get your letter as I had not had one for almost a week. This evening, we had a fine recital by Leland T. Powers of Boston. He gave Monsignor Buquelaire and was simply great. He is wonderful the way in which he can change his voice and expression from that of a woman to that of a man in an instant. You wouldn't think it possible he could change his appearance so much as he does by simply moosing up his hair and some other little things like that. After giving M. Bunner, he gave a short and very funny thing about some old country parson and other country people. This simply kept us roaring all the time. Mr. Fear was here today and they preached both this morning and afternoon. Many of the fellows here criticize him and one of the teachers, but I don't think they know what they are talking about. It makes me sore to hear them. I am getting to like Mr. Ralph more and more all the time. He is simply great. Always happy and cheery, never harsh or gruff, except when he has to stop fellows from roughhousing, and even then he is nice and makes a joke out of it or does something else. Just think, only 3 more weeks of study. If I escape exams, I might be able to leave here Tuesday afternoon or evening, March 24th. My, but won't I be glad when I get out of here. I tell you, it would be a relief to get away from the toil and grind of this place for a little while at least. You must tell me about Johnny and everything you can about Jay, Teddy, and anything that is going on at home. With lots of love to everyone, your loving son, William. March 6, 1903. Dear Mother, I was awfully glad to hear from you twice this week. About my coming home and my vacation, I am not in for any exam so far, and I think I am safe for this last week. Now, if I can possibly manage by toil and labor and grinding to keep out for the 2 weeks more, then I will be safe. Just think, Mother, exams begin the 24th of this month, and I hope to be able to leave that night, getting to Chicago the next evening. Only 16 more days, and I'd be out of this awful working place, and the winter term will be over. You can never appreciate how terrible this winter term is. As for the length of my vacation, it will be just 3 weeks, I think. That he realizes hope is evident from the following letter. My dear Mr. Borden, I am very glad to congratulate you on William's excellent record for the past term and to inform you that he is one of the 20 members of the school who have been excused from all their examinations. Faithfully yours, John Miggs. March 31st, 1903. The summer term brought new and varied experiences. To his mother, he wrote, April 17th, 1903. The trees here have quite large leaves, and fruit trees are in full blooms. Everything is fine, and I think this term will pass pretty quick. I want you to write me as often as possible and give me all the news about everything you possibly can. Sometimes I feel like punching the fellow's head who sits in the mail window and say, "Nothing for Borden," 3 times a day for sometimes 3 or 4 days in succession. Tell me about the doings of John, Mary, and baby, etc. April 20th, 1903. Dear Mother, the weather continually simply fine here. Beautiful, warm, sunshine days. Everything blooming as if it were midsummer. We have had a lot of fun now playing outdoors, games, and baseball track, etc. The gun club shooting is good fun, and I have improved greatly since last term. If I keep on improving, I might have some chance of making the gun team, and I will certainly work hard for it. My studies will be pretty hard this term, I think, but I can manage to get along all right, so you won't need to worry. This last week, I got 2 seconds and 5 firsts in subjects. I came very near forgetting to tell you about the sermon on Sunday. Campbell Morgan was here and preached a fine sermon in the morning, which was said to be the best ever given here. It certainly was fine. It was on Mark 1:11 and 6:3. Thou art my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased, and is not this the carpenter? Man's view and God's view. Mr. Morgan demonstrated that it must have been the 18 years of Christ's life, on which we know nothing, save that he was a carpenter in which he had pleased God. Then he went on to meditate on how much good an apprentice of his would have gotten. He said he did not think Christ would have talked of heaven or hell, but would have simply given him an example to follow by his everyday life in which there was no blemish. Some of the fellows thought it was a little long, but I did not and wanted more. It was wonderful the way he held everyone spellbound by his talk. For 5 or 10 minutes, no one ever stirred while he talked. Then, as if to relieve the strain, he would change his tone. Then the people would shift their position slightly and settle down again, and so on. It certainly was fine, and I hope he comes again. June 14, 1903. Dear Mother, I got your letter from Camden and was glad to hear from you. Now, commencement is all over, and we have begun work again, at least what's left of us, for there are only 15 or 16 formers here now. On Tuesday morning, the swimming contests were held. Our team was scratched in the relay race, and we got second place. In the afternoon, it being clear, the interclass track meet was held. It was very close and exciting throughout. The sixth form won with 43 points. We were second with 40. The next morning, the drill was held on the field. It was not very hot, and hence the drill did not seem very bad. Our company did not drill very well, and so we did not get the prize. But after the drill, the closing exercises were held in the gym. Prizes were given out and also gold medals. Eugene got 3 prizes of books for excellence in Latin, Greek, and Bible history. I got 1 in geometry. I am 17th in the school, 12th on second honor list, and 7th in our form. Lunch right after that was simply grand. Only one table was left in to serve stuff from, and everybody stood up. There was salmon, chicken croquettes, 2 or 3 kinds of salad, sandwiches, bouillon, and everything. About 6 different desserts. I took a liberal portion of everything and came very near regretting it. November 22nd, 1903. Dear Mother, it seems a perfect age since I had any communication from the outside world. We had been to Lawrenceville and our team got beaten by a score of 6-5. It seems awfully queer, the feeling that football is over. It seems unnatural, as if something had come to an end. But I will tell you about our trip to Lawrenceville. I was taken with the team as a sub. We left here Friday afternoon and got to Trenton about 8:00. We went to the Trenton house for the night. It was an awfully old affair. Must have been there in Washington's time. The hallways were a regular labyrinth, and we walked a terrible way before finding our rooms. In the morning, after breakfast, Mr. Sweeney gave us a talk in one of the fellows' rooms. I never knew what he was like before. He was wonderful. He talked to us for about 1 hour in all points, in football and especially fighting. I am sure he's thrilled every fellow. He did me, I know. After lunch, we went out to Lawrenceville. The game was at 2:00. Their team outweighed ours, nearly 20 pounds to the man, but that didn't keep our fellows from fighting just as hard. Lawrenceville teams usually have weight, but ours have hill spirit. In the first half, no scoring was done, and the ball was in their territory most of the time. In the second half, we scored a touchdown. Our man was so tired that he missed the goal, which really lost us the game. Then, with only a few minutes left to play, the teams lined up again. Their weight told now, and they pushed us down to about our 10th yard line. We held them and punted out. They came on again, we held again, and they came on and crossed the line. They kicked the goal, making the score 6-5. It was mighty hard for our fellows to lose like that, and they all felt mighty badly over it. They played simply fine, and nobody has any kick coming. I hope to be home in less than 3 weeks from now. Not very long, is it? I'll be mighty glad to get home and see you. I'm going to work these next 2 weeks, and then maybe I won't have any third week here. Your loving son, William. After the Christmas vacation, January 31st, 1904. Dear Mother, we have been having pretty good weather here and lots of snow. Yesterday we hired a bobsled and went coasting out here on a hill and had pretty good fun. The sled was enormous and one and held 9 or 10. The doctor was here today to preach, and he was very sad. In the morning he read a thing he called the first chapter of the Ephesians, but it wasn't out of the Bible and was as different as you could imagine. Then his sermon wasn't any good and was without a point. In the afternoon, he didn't even try to preach a Christian sermon, but gave us one of the Confucianisms in Japan. He had spent about 20 years in Japan and is quite an authority on it. This was about some fool on a class of fools, and the point was what we had come into the world for. It was better, I thought, that his morning attempt, but nothing much at that. He is a teacher or something at the Union Theological Seminary. Gene thinks it's the best in the country and says practically everyone goes there to prepare for ministry. I disagree. And he said his grandfather had founded it. I then said that it had probably changed a great deal since that time. That man getting up there and reading his text out of some book, which didn't resemble a Bible in any way, just made me tired and fixed him for me. I thought how bad things are getting to be. I didn't know, and don't know whether I told you about Mr. Weed or not, but anyway, he was off nearly 2 weeks. His mother was expected to die at any moment, but she didn't, and now she's recovered. As a result, he's feeling mighty happy and thankful. In Bible class tonight, he read about the miracle of the wine at the marriage feast. Then he said that it was the modern idea that the man who believed in miracles was way behind the times. But he said things would happen in our lives so that we would have to believe in them. He said, I have seen miracles within the last 2 weeks and believe in them. It was good that, after some of doctors' trash, I know you think the same way, and it makes me tired to hear all this talk about the old beliefs. Mr. Weed is going to put the lights out in just a minute, and I will have to say good night. Your loving son, William. Happily for the boy's faith, he was well grounded in the Word of God, and so that anything that seemed to him contrary to the truth awoke an energetic reaction in his soul. Looking back on these and the similar experiences, he wrote to the committee of the Chicago Avenue Church some years later. I am very thankful for the teaching I received at Moody Church and Institute before I was 15 years of age, because it kept me firm in my beliefs in spite of opposition and criticism, which I was not able to answer. The great truths of the deity of Christ, his victorious atonement, and the inspiration and authority of the Bible had been indelibly impressed upon me. I was especially impressed by the testimony of our Lord himself to this last matter and was willing to wait until I could go to seminary and be prepared to meet the critics on their own ground, hoping that the good work may be on and that many may be won to Christ and strengthen the faith as I was. I remain very sincerely yours, William W. Borden. Debates, orations, and the class dance were absorbing as the spring came again, not to speak of the war news from the Far East. February 3rd, 1904. Dear Mother, I have heard from both Mary and Majoria, and each says she can come. Mary says Miss Kellogg would chaperone her. It was the first I knew about such a thing, and it might have made trouble. But it is all right, and I am all fixed now except to order more flowers for Miss Kellogg. We have to get 2 sets of flowers, one for the dance on Friday night and the other for the show on Saturday night. I have ordered violets and bridesmaid roses to the amount of $6. Then we have to have a rig to go riding in, traumatic club seats, etc. Besides the $14 I spoke of in my last letter. Gene delivered his oration the other night, and it went off pretty well. In fact, all the orations so far have been remarkably good, and it's up to us who come later to do as well. As I have told you, mine comes Friday, the second speaker. I get scared off and on by spells. I am very much interested in watching this war between Russia and Japan, and I suppose you must be. We rush over to the reading room after breakfast for a glimpse of the morning papers before going to study. The newsboys, who sells papers here in the evening, has a flourishing business, and you have to hustle to get one. Japan seems to be doing the Russians up on the sea. I should think you might write to Huntingdon Wilson for news, although it would be rather old by the time it reached here. The remaining letters for the year are missing, save one, which gives a lasting impression of Borden at the Hill. He graduated in 1904, receiving a grade of 83.6, standing fourth in a firm of 48 boys, on whom he was the youngest. February 21st, 1904. Dear Mother, this morning we had communion service in the new chapel at 8 o'clock. Mr. Spheres and Dr. Cuthbert Hall conducted, and it was very nice. Of course, attendance was not compulsory. Only a few were there. Dedication service was very good. Mr. Fear and Mr. Halls both made addresses. It is after lights now, and I have to say goodbye. Your loving son, William. End of chapter 2.